Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where we discuss separating and building separate communities, communities with like minds and like thoughts and like cultural background and like beliefs, a community where we can look at as the shining example of black excellence, a community where we can be safe, where we can produce for ourselves, where we control what we, how we work together, what we produce, what we consume, and we put our interests first above everybody else's. Communities like that don't exist, so we are working hard to make an example, a shining example. And hopefully, if Allah blesses us to be successful, if the Creator blesses us to be successful with our example of a shining, separate, self-governed community, maybe others can come up. And then as we develop communities all over the country, we can improve the condition of our people. So tonight we have a wonderful show, and I'm excited about it. It has to do with intentional communities, and so I'm not going to go into it, and I'm going to bring on tonight's host for tonight's show. That is our wonderful sister with the Time to Leave movement, Sister Niambi Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Niambi.
Alaikum salam, Brother Carlson. Thank you.
So, yes, ma'am. Your guest is in the queue, and when you let me know, when you get ready, I'll bring her on.
Okay, yes, sir. I think it's okay for you to bring her into the queue, too, or thank you.
Okay, and Sister Ajua, I see you in our queue. If you can go ahead and press the 1 on your keypad, that will keep you at the top of my queue. Go ahead, Sister Ajua, press the 1. Okay.
She in?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, your mic is open now.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, we are truly honored by your willingness to join us on tonight's show. And so, brothers and sisters, on tonight's show, as Brother Paulson has mentioned, we have one of the co-founders of the Ella Jo Baker Intentional Community Cooperative, Sister Ajua Ifeateyo. So, again, welcome, Sister Ajua.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And so, before we begin, just so the callers on the line can get to know just a little bit about you, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself, Tess?
Okay. I am a person who really feels passionate about cooperatives. And cooperatives are businesses that are owned by a group of people that benefits their needs. And so I have been in the worker cooperative movement for about 15 years. And a worker cooperative is a business where the workers own the business and make decisions about the business. And so that's a movement that's been going on for several years, and it's one that's really touched my heart. And so I've been doing that, and I help start up housing cooperatives. And there are all types of cooperatives. We can co-op anything that we need to help us survive. So I've done that, and right now I'm a caregiver for my mother, which I think is a whole other thing that we can start to cooperate on.
Wow, yes, ma'am, absolutely. Okay, and so for those on the line who may not be familiar with the term intentional community co-op, because the word intentional says that, you know, something that is done with great intent, something that's done with purpose, with meaning,
yes,
behind it. So would you please elaborate a little bit on what exactly is an intentional community cooperative?
Okay, so an intentional community is one where people sit down and decide that they want to have a community around a particular issue or purpose. In our case, we wanted to have a community around activists. And so our community is one where it is required, in order to be a part of the co-op, you have to be an activist. Others sometimes start intentional communities around religious beliefs or other beliefs. You know, sometimes single parents might get together and say, hey, let's build a community where we will help each other, you know, take care of the children, look after the children. So any idea, a purpose, or issue that you're dealing with, you can decide to make that the central theme of that of your community, your cooperative, and only allow people in who believe the same thing that you do or have the same goals or interests, those kinds of things. That's why it's very intentional. You decide you want a particular type of person, type of belief, and you set these beliefs up, and if they can live by those principles or beliefs, then they are people that you would have in your community.
I love that. So would you say then that the inspiration behind the creation of the Ella Jo Baker community is activism?
Yes. Well, you know, what happened is Washington, D.C., where we're located, we're in a part of town called Columbia Heights, which is about 2 miles from the White House. And at the time when we were looking for a place to settle in, that neighborhood had been pretty much abandoned. There was a large apartment complex there that had a lot of drug activity. And you know, it's only like a block and a half from where we are. And so the whole neighborhood had a lot of issues. There were many boarded up houses. And so what we decided to do was that we wanted to save some housing for people who were organizing, because it was quickly going and quickly being impossible to be able to afford to live in Washington. So Linda Leakes, who was a housing tenant organizer in D.C., she used to work with the Washington Inner City Self-Help. She was involved in a lot of tenant struggles, and she saw the future. She saw that it was going to be hard to find decent housing. So it was her vision to try to start a co-op to save some housing for people who were doing the work to help other people. You know, generally organizers don't make a lot of money. They do it because they have a love of the community. And so, you know, if you're doing that kind of work for other people, the idea was, let's save some housing so that they could afford to continue to live in the city and can afford to continue to do the work that was necessary to help other people. So that was the inspiration, and we wanted to have a place where activists could live and continue to do their work. So that's one of our requirements. You have to be involved in something. And, you know, it doesn't have to be like heavy political stuff. Initially, when we started, there were people who were visiting AIDS patients or people who were helping out young people in child care. But a lot of us were doing other kinds of things. And so, you know, like organizing political campaigns, trying to save housing, you know, because the landlords were doing like really terrible things to force people out of apartment buildings so that they could turn them into luxury condos. So it was just a lot of stuff going on. So that was the whole idea.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. And your website describes your community as a multicultural association of individuals of modest means with similar concerns, needs, and history of community activism and fighting for social justice. It says, we have deliberately chosen to live together and work cooperatively to create a lifestyle that reflects the values of the Nguzo, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Saba, Nguzo
Saba,
better known.
Yes.
Thank you. Better known as the Kwanzaa Principles. Would you mind just elaborating a little bit on that for our audience?
Yes. Yes. This community was started by about five black women and one black man. And actually, he ended up dropping out. So we decided that we wanted to live the Kwanzaa principle. Those are the Kwanzaa principles, seven principles of collective work and responsibility, faith, purpose, cooperative economics. Those principles were the things that we wanted to live by. So everybody who lived in the co-op had to say or believe in these principles. And at the time, we decided to allow other people into the co-op. So when we started, we had mostly African American women. We had, I think, one or two Hispanic women. We had somebody from the Middle East. We had one Jewish woman, one North American woman, and yeah, I think that was basically it. It was a 15 unit building. We took five houses and we contacted a nonprofit developer, and so we turned those five houses into 15 units. And so the majority of the folks in there were African-American women and a few other folks and one man at the time. So that's why it was multicultural, but everyone there adopted the Kwanzaa principles and, you know, and those and worked by those principles, as well as the cooperative principles, some of which are similar to the Kwanzaa principles. So those are our guiding principles. Those are the things we believe in, the values that we practice in our cooperative.
Yes, ma'am. I really appreciate how you all set the foundation by establishing the principles of Kwanzaa so that anybody who wanted to come into your community was already aware of the, a nominal requirement. So I think that was a really smart thing to have in place. Now,
yes.
I believe you all started in 1999 with, as you said, a little over or five or so individuals. And so would you talk to us a little bit about how you all transitioned from the planning into living together in 2003?
Okay. So the planning was, with those five or six people. And so we knew we wanted to have, 15 units. So the process then became, how do we choose people who would work, who were activists, who would work to build a community, who could live by these values and be an asset? And so we developed a process where we, first of all, we wanted to have someone who has some experience living or working together. When Linda and I were friends, we were members of the African People's Socialist Party, based primarily in Florida, but some other states. I think we had people in Kentucky and California at the time. So we knew each other. We had worked together for probably a good 10 years. So we knew each other. And the African-American man who was one of the initial followers, we had worked on some political stuff in Florida. So, and then we had met some sisters in D.C. working around different issues. So the six of us, we knew each other. And so, and we knew we could work together. And so we had to come up with some criteria for the other people. So one of the things was, you had to have lived in or worked cooperatively, like lived in a group house. Like in D.C., rents were kind of expensive. So what Linda and I did, we rented a big house. It was a five-bedroom house. And we found two other people, and we shared. The rent was $600. That was, 1982, I think, when we first when I moved to D.C., Linda was already there. And we had this group house, and so we had four or five women at different times living together. And so we had already learned some of the issues of working, living together, like, make sure you clean up after yourself in the kitchen, clean after yourself in the bathroom, be respectful, of other people's, sleeping habits and eating habits and music and all that kind of stuff. So we really knew that we wanted somebody who had some experience. We didn't want to have to start over and teach people basic stuff. So, and even if you didn't live in a cooperative house or a group house, if you worked cooperatively or you just understood cooperativism and you knew that you had to look out not just for yourself but for other people. So that was one thing. And then the other thing was, being a cooperator, not an individualistic person who only thought about themselves. So we set up a whole interview process. We announced it. We said that, we were going to be looking for people for the membership in the co-op. And we put out flyers. We put in a newspaper to try to find people. And so we developed, a questionnaire. First we had an application process. So we had people to fill out an application. And one of the things that we decided not to do was not to deny someone who had bad credit, because we knew that, issues happen in people's lives. And so if their credit was bad, that wasn't going to knocked them out of the race. But we did, you know, compromise on the fact that if they had had a bad situation with not paying their rent, got put out for things like that, then that would automatically disqualify some people. But just because, you know, you didn't have the high number in credit, that wasn't going to be a thing. So after they would fill out the application, we chose some people that we decided we wanted to interview. And so some of the questions were around, how could you live together? How would you live together? What's your thoughts on individualism versus collectivism? You know, different things like that. We were basically trying to find people who would fit, because one of the things that we knew and we even learned more of later on is that your home is the place where you come to relax and regroup. And we didn't want to have people in the co-op or the community who were hostile or didn't want to work together, who would, instead of working out problems, would just get silent or get hostile. And so we wanted our home to be like safe harbor, a place where we could feel good together. We weren't thinking that we would never have issues, but if we had issues, we could work them out and we could still love each other and help and be supportive of each other. So we were trying to find those type of people. And we asked those questions. And then we voted on people that we thought were good. I mean, we made some good choices and we made a couple of bad choices. And so that's the thing, if anybody is wanting to set up a cooperative, one of the things that we learned is that people will basically say anything to get in, especially at that time where gentrification was a serious issue and people were desperate for housing. And so one of our requirements was that in order to be in the co-op, you had to be active on either a committee, like we would have, say, a security committee or administrative committee, education committee, a maintenance or building committee. So you had to work in one of those committees or you had to be an officer. And we only use officers because the state required that to set up, to be chartered. So, you know, you would have to have a president, vice president, but we did not function in that hierarchical way. We only had that for the state, or in this case, the district. The district government required that. But in the way we operated, all decisions were made together, and there was no one person who was in charge. So we had that as a requirement, that you had to work and you had to have a meeting. We had meetings once a month. And so we would try to make sure that people would agree to that. But, of course, people would say, yes, 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 I'll do everything. But when it came down to a meeting, we did have some problems with people who didn't want to come to meetings. And that was our main way of making decisions and doing stuff. So it was really important for people to come to meetings. So my suggestion, and some of us have talked about it, is that if you're starting the co-op, you do want to have like a probationary period where you actually train people on how to be cooperative. We have been raised in a society that's very individualistic, that we don't care about other people. We think, oh, hey, I got mine. I ain't worrying about this person. We are trained not to understand that we're all connected, and what we do affects other people and vice versa. And so we have to teach that. We have to let people know what it is expected and how we've been brainwashed not to care. And so, and then, and also how to make decisions. and how to handle problems, and what does it mean to own a building? You know, what does it mean to, like, be responsible for the finances of a building? And so it's really necessary to have classes on these things. And so what we decided is that, you know, if we had classes and people had to come to classes for 8 weeks or 12 weeks to learn about these things, that might weed out the people who were just saying anything just to get in the co-op. And what we say is that it's like a marriage. You want to really look at people because you have to live with them. And you don't want to marry somebody who is just, you know, when there's a problem, they're not going to talk about it. And then, you know, you don't know what's going on. They might strike out, you know, violently or whatever. You want to have somebody that has your values, your beliefs, who loves you, who cares about you, even though, hey, we're not seeing the same thing here. We're keeping our interests in the forefront. So you really do. That is the most important thing, making sure that you pick the right people. And the second most important thing is education. You have to educate people. We just don't learn how to cooperate. So that's part of what we did, was to try to pick people who would fit these values. And, you know, we then we also wanted to – one of our things was to make sure that we had women who had children who needed 2 and 3 bedrooms apartments to be able to accommodate some of those folks too. So that was a long answer. Sorry.
No. That was great. Thank you. It was a very detailed answer. We appreciate that. So in about 2 minutes or so, we're going to open up the lines to callers. But before we do that, I wanted to mention something that I thought or that I think is very interesting about your community. There is a membership process and there's a required weekly labor contribution. So tell us about that.
Okay, so well, it's not a really a weekly process, but I guess you could consider it that you know that you have to have a committee meeting. You also, we actually have changed some things so that in order to save money, we do some of the maintenance stuff ourselves, and that's, you know, cleaning the inside of the building, our apartment buildings, and some of the putting out salt and stuff in the winter if it's not too bad, those kinds of things. But basically it's, you know, having a meeting and to discuss some of the issues. And the membership issue is, you know, believing in those principles and practicing those principles, being able to talk about issues instead of holding things in and working things out. Those are basically the requirements, you know, as well as, you know, a financial requirement of paying a share of the a monthly share and a fee, a share of, you know, amount that's determined in order to move in. It's like you put in some money for the general operation of it. You, in order to become a member, you have to pay a share.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for that. Brother Carlson, do we have any callers in the queue waiting to speak with Sister Ajua?
At this time, we do not have any callers in the queue. I will say, callers, please, if you would like to enter the discussion, ask a question from our guest or our host, please press the 1 on your keypad, and we will recognize you, and we will bring you in the dialogue. So if you have a question or a comment, please press the 1. And I will let you know, Sister Niambi, as soon as somebody presses the key.
Okay. Well, we'll continue with our interview, Sister Ajua. Now, on your website, I'm not sure if this is still a part of the requirement or what have you, but it said, and you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but it says that you all are open to members with some existing debt. So does that mean that if members apply and they have a lot of debt, you know, they have a lot of credit card debt or a lot of, I don't know, maybe they have a I don't know, but, you know, if they have a lot of debt, whatever that means to you all, does that mean that they may not be allowed into the co-op? Or just if you would please express exactly what you all meant by that, being open to members with some existing debt.
Oh, I'm not sure. What website are you reading from?
So,
okay, give me a second here.
And Sister Niambi, we do have a caller.
Okay. We'll come back to that question.
Okay.
Would you like me to open that caller's line?
Please, yes.
Okay, looks like it's Sister Ann. Assalamualaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. I don't have a question. I would just like to say I am enjoying the program so much. And I applaud the guest and Sister Niambe. So please continue. And the program is very, very good.
Thank you so much.
And praise be to Allah. Thank you for that, Sister Ann.
You're welcome.
Yes. Did you want to say anything else, Sister Ann?
No, that was it. I just wanted you to know I'm listening and I'm enjoying the program.
Yes, ma'am. Praise be to Allah. So, Sister Ajua, let me correct myself. So, this is actually on the IC.org website. But it is you all, I guess it's, you know, it just features information about your community. So on the IC.org website, it's the Foundation for Intentional Community, obviously. And then it lists, you know, your mission statement, your community description, when you all were established. It has information about your faith, how to access your Facebook page. But I actually found Sister Takata on this page. So there's a lot of good information on here. I don't know if this actually applies in any of this, but there's a lot of, for instance, this will lead me to another question. It mentions things like dietary practices, shared meals. It says they're 1 to 3 times per month. But do you all produce your own food? Because it does mention that you all own, the land is owned by the entire community membership. It mentions that you do grow some of your own food, not in total, but you do grow some of your own food. Is that correct?
Yes, we have a garden. Now, in D.C., from what I understand, you don't really own the land. I really don't understand that process, but we own the buildings. And we have a garden that is very prolific. And so all of us get to pick greens and tomatoes and carrots and okra and all of those things. But you have to remember, we're an urban intentional community. Some communities are out in, like, areas where they have big farms and stuff like that. We just have a small garden. So most of us... One of our members does work with the CSA, and so some of us support CSAs, or we shop at other cooperatives, food cooperatives, but we're basically responsible for our own individual food. And then we share the garden, the food from the garden. We all work in the garden and, you know, till to get the soil straight and, you know, water and that kind of stuff, but we don't do anything large scale as far as food is concerned. We will, you know, have dinners with potlucks and we have like parties and discussions and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. we basically handle our own food individually.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Now, Ms. Audra, I want to talk about just some of the principles that are needed in order for a group of people to, you know, just kind of live together in peace. And they would be great character, common sense, you know, a bit of creativity, and a drive to achieve a shared mission,
mm-hmm.
or kind of, you know, what would be needed to, like I said, live together successfully. And how do those principles fit into your community?
Well, like I said, the thing that unites us is that we came together to provide decent, affordable housing for all of us, and that's very important. It's generally 25 to sometimes 50. Housing is generally 25 to 50% of most people's budgets, and so
mm-hmm.
You have to think in a collective way to make sure that our costs don't become unnecessarily high.
Mm-hmm.
Our community is probably, you know, Columbia Heights has really blown up in terms of prices. Like, you can't even find a studio there for $1,500, for less than $1,500. So,
mm-hmm.
One bedrooms can run from $2,000 to $3,500 so far that we found. And we don't have that kind of expense. So
mm-hmm.
we want to keep it that way. We want to keep it affordable. We're in a neighborhood where, you know, we're surrounded by people who, you know, have much higher incomes. And so we try to keep our expenses low so that we can continue to afford to live there. So one of the values is to make sure that we don't waste money. We look at our budget. We see that we might be spending a little bit more money on water. And so we want to make sure everybody is doing what they need to do to make sure that the water bill doesn't get, you know, too out of hand. So it's like a concern of, you know, it's basically self-interest, but it's everybody's interest. It's, you know, our interest of having affordable housing is a group interest as well as a personal interest. So, you know, you got to have that. You got to have that ability and willingness to respect each other, even though you might disagree. We you know, one of our values is not to use profanity or get loud or hostile when we're trying to work out issues. And so you have to be able to deal with that. You have to be able to speak, say what your issue is, and not only that, participate in a discussion of possible solutions and be willing to try something that maybe you think may not be the answer, but, you know, the whole group has decided, well, we want to try this, even though you disagree. You have to be willing to give it a try and give it a honest try. And the other thing is, sometimes people might be a little shy. Some people are talkers and some people are not. And so we try to encourage everybody to speak because we feel like everybody has a unique contribution. Everybody knows pretty much how to run a household. You know, you have to know what you make. You know, you got to take out for your rent. You got to pay your light and water bills. And then after that, then you can, you know, do other stuff. And so what we try to have people understand is that you have experience. You know how to spend money. And so it's the same principle with a building. You know, we pay what we call a carrying charge, and that's carrying the mortgage. We have the building has a mortgage, and we each pay a part of that mortgage on a monthly basis to keep it going. And so, you know, if you understand paying rent or mortgage, you understand paying your carrying charges and how to, you know, not splurge with the money. So that, talking about problems, being willing to work with solutions, let's see, and being a good representative and spokesperson for cooperatives and the cooperative life. We've had mm-hmm. some dealings with the district government, and so we feel like that's an important part of what we have to do too, is to go out there and let district government know when we're having issues or what are some of the issues that cooperatives, housing cooperatives in general, might have.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Nyambi.
Yes.
I have a caller with a question,
ma'am.
And that caller is myself. I have a question. My question is actually a couple of questions. One is, how do you handle disputes and or people who are not as cooperative, members who are not as cooperative that you would like them to be?
Okay. So first we try to encourage, if say two members are having an issue, we try to encourage them to talk things out among themselves. Somebody make the effort and try to have a conversation. If they cannot work it out, then they bring that problem to the whole group. And then the group will have each person say what their position is and what they tried to do to resolve it. And then we'll come up with some suggestions. And, you know, we might say, well, person A needs to do such and such, and person B needs to do such and such. And, you know, try to watch that. And if things don't work out, then we probably would have to have, say, like a grievance hearing, and we have a whole process for grievance. And then, you know, the group votes on, you know, some kind of solution. And if, you know, we've never had this happen, but I think if somebody continues to be uncooperative and continue to be a problem, we might have to vote to ask that person to leave. Now, one of the things we do have is house rules. And so in the house rules, we determine how we're going to operate our place. Like, one, for example, after 11 o'clock, no loud music. And we all have washers and dryers in our units. And so another rule is, don't be washing at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because you might disturb your neighbor. Let's see. These are basic things that most people know, but you have to kind of set it as a rule because there's always going to be somebody who violates the rule or violates the common decency or common sense. And so if they continue to violate those rules or if they act in a manner that's contrary to our Kwanzaa principles or cooperative principles or how we decide we want to have meetings, then, you know, we would have to have a talk with the person and try to get them to do better. And if they don't, eventually we may have to ask the person to leave.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I did have another question, but we have some callers
sure.
that are in the queue. First one is Dr. Ridgely. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Well, alaikum salam. And I'm thoroughly enjoying the guest. Is the Ajwa? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. What area of D.C. is that? Is it how close is that to? I don't know that much about D.C., but to Howard, for instance. I know what Howard is. Is anywhere close to Howard?
We are 7 blocks west of Howard.
Okay.
We actually walk there all the time. It's walking distance. We're actually between the Columbia Heights Metro, which is on 17th and Irving, and the U Street Civil War Museum Metro, which is on U Street itself, like 13th Street and U Street. So we could actually walk to either of those metros off of 14th Street and near Malcolm X Park. If you know about Malcolm X Park, we're right behind there.
So did y'all choose the location based on a number of you what were already living in the area, or did something bring y'all together to the area?
We chose the location because there were a lot of abandoned houses, boarded up houses that the houses that we have used to be like public housing or affordable housing. And and D.C. government just because they were having so many problems with drugs and people, you know, like breaking in and making crack houses and stuff like that, they just boarded them up and they didn't want to do anything with them anymore. So we just went to them and said, hey, we'll take these off your hands. We had to pay them $1 for the building. You know, you have to pay something, otherwise you get taxed.
Right.
So they sold them to us for $1 each.
Wow.
And then what we did was got funding from, we got some HUD money. D.C. government promised us some money, but they reneged on it. But we got most of the money. We got most of the money from a foundation that believed in affordable housing. They gave us like $1.2 million. We had to pay it back. But, you know, they fronted the money for us, and we were able to pay a nonprofit housing developer to come in and knock down walls and do whatever they do. They redesigned those buildings. There were two houses on one side of the street and three on the other that were right next to each other. And so they knocked down some walls and made like three bedrooms because they were very hard to find, and redesigned the buildings and everything. So, that's how we did it. We see these buildings are not being used. We need public affordable housing.
So we are already in a type of organization before y'all decided to do this. I'm just trying to see what made you coalesce. How did y'all come about doing that?
Because one of our members, Linda Leakes, was a tenant organizer in D.C. So she saw a lot of the problems, and she saw the fact that the city was being gentrified. So she was like, hey, we need to grab some of this housing because we're not going to be able to afford to live here. And so we just looked around and found those buildings and just went to the city and got them. Said, hey, we want to do affordable housing. They weren't doing anything with them, so they gave them to us and let us develop them. And if anybody out there is thinking about this, this is the time to jump on it. Look around your neighborhood, find the abandoned houses, even the most undesirable. That's probably the place to go. You know, the place where people are scared to go. Go in those places, find the abandoned houses, get the city government to sell them to you for $1 in the name of developing affordable housing. Then, you know, look for funding. You can get funding from HUD. The city will fund you. Some places, county and state governments. But there are all kinds of foundations out here that under, I think SEEDCO was the name of the foundation that we had. But I don't think that they exist now, or if they do, they exist under another name. But do your homework. They have foundation libraries out here. You can access them online. I know DC have one, but they have them all around the country. You know, like brick and mortar buildings. But go online and find foundations who are willing to loan you money at a cheap rate, or it might be some that has grants. And you go in and you find somebody who knows what they're doing to develop that property, and you get them to do it. And so in our case, the group was MANA, and so we have a joint covenant where these buildings have to stay affordable housing for 99 years. So that way,
your nobody can go in and say, hey, we're gonna now make these for profit buildings and, you know, change it over. People can't sell out. They can't sell out and say they're gonna sell their unit for $1 million. We got a covenant where that can't happen.
Oh, now that that's really smart. Now let me ask you a question though. If the buildings are run down because of, you know, drug trafficking or whatever, how are y'all able to clean it? I mean, do y'all have drug traffic problems now?
When we first moved in, it was a problem because, you know, the junkies would walk through the alley 4 o'clock in the morning, talking loud, playing the music and stuff like that. But I'm not sure what happened. But that eventually stopped. You know, at one point we were talking about some kind of security, you know, watching the buildings and stuff like that, make sure people don't go in. And at first we used to have problems with people were coming in our yards and turning on the water hose to use it and leaving it running. So we had to have, you know, a little security, stuff like that. But eventually, and it's probably due to the gentrification, but the area pretty much cleaned up now. I mean, we still have, you know, little problems like people sitting on the steps, you know, smoking reefer, stuff like that. But no big issues, no big issues at all.
But why would gentrification help solve that problem in terms of those types of people being around? I mean, how does that work?
Oh, well, you know, when white folks move into a neighborhood, the police comes by, they clean it up more, they make it safe for white people. That's the bottom line. They clean it up because white people in the neighborhood. And D.C., even though at the time it was a predominantly black council, they acted like that. They didn't care about certain communities because there was poor black people there. And so when white people move in, you know, everything changes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the facts of life.
that's interesting. Thank you for that history. And may Allah bless y'all to continue to be prosperous and be examples for others. You know, this situation is all over the country where there are opportunities.
Yes.
But it doesn't look good from the outside. Because, you know, like the fight and the drugs and the drug addicts, but through working together, one can take those chances and go ahead and make your community a safe place to live. So thank you so much for coming to the program.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yes, we have to, like, take control over our communities, and, you know, we do that through security and treating folks with drug habits like individuals and try to help them get some help. And, you know, we were fortunate in D.C. to have a group called RAP that they made a point. In fact, the Kwanzaa calendar this year has a story about the brother Ron Clark, I believe his name is, who organized that RAP program to get people off of addiction. And one of the things he really taught them was that we had to be concerned about the community. So, you know, it's like he took that dependency and turned it into activism for the community. So, you know, we have to think along those lines too. I mean, it's a balance, you know. You have to have your security. Like, we made sure we kept our doors, our front doors locked because people would try them. And so, you know, you have to do stuff to protect yourself, but at the same time, you try to help the community as well. We had a lot of big ideas for the community, but we weren't able to do them. Like, we wanted to set up a buying club for people in on the street in the adjacent streets, because we all use, you know, oil, salt, seasoning, flour, you know, those kinds of washing powder. To just have the community be a part of the buying club so that everybody can get stuff cheaply. But that wasn't able to happen. But there's things like that we can do
to have our the space around our co-ops and our buildings be safe space, because we're engaging the community and we're helping them out too. So we need to think about
yes,
what our neighborhoods need.
Yes, we're down to our last 5 minutes, and Sister Niamh, but we still have one more caller. Should I open the queue for them?
Yes, sir, please.
Caller with the last four digits, 2723. What's your name? Where you and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Zakia calling from Memphis. And my question was on like within either in your particular community or any other intentional communities you might know of, how do y'all go about collectively educating and raising the children within the community that y'all have or any other communities?
We haven't done much because we haven't had like the same age group of children. At one time we wanted to have a young cooperators league, which would be a way of getting the children together, learning about what a co-op is, and learning how to work together and cooperate in different ways. We haven't really come up with anything else, because we kind of like, one thing about being an activist community, one of the downsides is we're often more into the issues that we're organizing around. And so that's a drawback sometimes. But you could actually form a committee to work with your children. And a key thing is you want to teach them what it means, because you want them to, when they grow up, see this as a model that they can do as well. And they need to understand how it works. Why mommy and daddy got to go to the meeting, why there's a fundraising. Because what we did was fundraise to get washers and dryers in our units. And so, why is there a fundraising? What is it for? You can have a garden. You can have all kinds of things. And it's really important to get the children involved in those things and teach them what it means to cooperate. And, some of the things that we do is, we look out for the kids. If a parent has to go, somebody will watch them. I have a mother, and people will watch my mother or take her stuff. So those are the things that are invaluable. Even to watch your packages, when Amazon or whoever might deliver a package, sometimes, people will take your stuff. But we have co-op people who, pick up your packages and put them, inside and keep it safe. So you can do whatever you need. It's just a matter of, setting up that committee and coming up with ideas and putting it into place.
All right. Well, thank you for your call, caller. We are down to the last minute of the show. Sister Niambi, and if you all want to have any closing statements and let our listeners know how we can contact your guests, now's the time.
Yes, okay. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to give my email address, ifateyo@gmail.com. That's ifateyo@gmail.com.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Sister Ajwa. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on our show. Again, we are very, very grateful, and we thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on to the show with us and answer our questions and educate us about your community. And we hope to make contact with you again in the near future.
Great. And I want to encourage anybody who has those ideas to go and do it right now. You can write me. I'll try to help as much as I can.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Lord, I've really been real stressed.
Uh-huh.
Down.